Hi, welcome to Together Equal Diversity Made Simple, hosted by me, Sarah Aird-Mash.
And me, Andrew Mill.
We'll be talking to guests about their diversity journey and asking them to share their one simple tip towards making the workplace more diverse, equal and inclusive. Thanks for tuning in. I'm excited to introduce you to our guest, Jen Rice, co-founder and CEO of Lodestone Insights, which blends AI with human intelligence to deliver deeper human insights, which inform and drive leadership talent planning for clients. Jen, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what it is you do?
Yeah. So before Lodestone, my background is 30 years of understanding what makes human beings tick, from a strategy perspective. So I spent all this time understanding, you know, what motivates customers as well as employees, and then kind of figured out, oh, all of these insights actually apply to us as human beings, and started asking myself what motivated me and what motivated other people around me. It's always been a question that I've been really, really fascinated by.
And you're really interested in the hidden values, aren't you? So it's going beyond what one portrays to them. Even if you're saying that you're bringing your authentic self to work,
yeah,
you are bringing a version of yourself, but you dive much deeper, don't you?
Yeah. So one thing that we're building out is this model called Psidentity. Instead of identity, of course, is the way it's used commonly is, are you the same person that's on your passport? You know, it's just a description. It's, you know, height and hair color and gender and all these things that we can see and label. And if we double click one step below identity, it's about personality. There are a million psychometric tests. So you might know these as Myers-Briggs or DISC or Big Five, and they are really measuring observable traits about people. What we can see, how you show up. But how you show up at work might be totally different than how you show up at home or with different people, different contexts. We'll bring out different sides of ourselves. So we really need to go a step deeper even than personality and start understanding, why do we behave the way we do? And so I've been digging into those layers for, actually, this has been most of my career, is what we call psychographics, which are these deeper underlying predictors of behavior. It's our core needs, how our core needs are met, how that feeds into our core intrinsic values and motivations in a way that we're often not even conscious of. And then the next layer beneath that is how our brains are wired. So we like to think of neurodiversity as a bunch of labels like ADHD or autism, but in reality, everybody's brains is a bit like a coral reef. I mean, there's this massive, unique, let's call it biodiversity, but everybody's brains is all wired slightly differently. And there's probably less than 20% of people whose brains are wired differently than the norm. And so they're going to act differently, and they may not have some diagnosis. They just see the world through different lenses. And when we actually operate at that level, we start understanding how people see the world and process information is completely different. Well, that's when this whole conversation about diversity starts to get really interesting, because it starts explaining why you have, you know, tensions in a team, or you start preferring some people over other people because we're able to, our brains just pick up on all these differences subtly, subconsciously.
And then Lodestone takes all of these insights and lends it to a kind of leadership lens, so you can really identify leadership potential and stuff.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do at Lodestone, now imagine you probably can meet someone and within 5 seconds, you kind of have a feeling about them, right? And it could be the way they talk. It could be their eye movements or their body language. Somehow we are picking up all the time on all these signals that other people are sending completely. All of this is completely unconscious to us, but our brains are just picking up on all of these signals. So if our brains are able to pick up on these signals, then can a computer? can a machine learn? So we're exploring things like natural language processing, which can dissect language and actually understand who you are as a person from personality, as well as some of those underlying behaviors. So some of these are available now, and we're going to be using some things out of the box that have been developed, but we're also building our own models. So we want to really get in and start understanding how could, let's say, computer vision and essentially combining computer vision and natural language processing to read people's body language and verbal language to help understand who they are as a human being. And then what does that mean for leadership?
So, you know, building on the leadership question, you know, what's your perspective on promoting diversity at the leadership level?
Oh, that needs a lot of help, doesn't it? So if we look at statistics, so we have something like 65% of new hires are women and people of color, but they only represent much less than 30% at senior leadership. So along the way, they're not getting the opportunity to get developed. And I think what's happening here is, again, cognitive bias or subconscious bias, even by people who are extremely well-meaning. We have this idea in our head of what leadership looks like. And we've inherited this idea of leaders, you know, back from Henry Ford's day, where everything was, the world was slower and more manageable, and everybody was interested in putting processes around stuff. But now everything is moving so much faster. It's all about rapid change. It's about resilience. It's about being very flexible. We have to look at a completely new style of leadership. One is that is much more collaborative. It's less about control and more about magnetizing and attracting the right humans, whether they're employees, customers, partners, and orchestrating instead of controlling and managing. And that's going to take a very different kind of person to lead than we've had in the past. But since we've got this cognitive bias, everyone knows that we need a different kind of leader, and yet, what do you know? We keep getting the same kind of leaders. And it's because we have this cognitive bias around who we think leader should be. What does a leader look like? And we have just these automatic shortcuts in our brain that says, oh, this is a leader or this is not a leader. So when we're able to use things like computers, now machine learning, natural language processing, to surface the human beings underneath what is visible, whether that's what they look like or maybe personality traits, and you start getting under the hood, if you will, around why these people act the way they do, we're able to then reveal what I call revealing the hidden gems. There are hidden gems lurking all throughout these organizations. And if we can use a technology to actually surface these hidden gems, they may not be who you think they are in terms of, oh, I never would have thought that that person had good leadership potential. But in fact, they have those intrinsic capabilities, right? That is able to lead in this kind of complex, very human-centric world.
Do you think there's potential for barriers to be hit, especially when it comes to the HR perspective? Because when you're looking for a leader, that person has to tick this box, this box, this box, this box in order to qualify for a role. Now, if you're finding people who aren't able to fit into the boxes but can maneuver around the different job requirements, do you think from the HR perspective there's going to be issues because people aren't able to be pigeonholed anymore?
Yeah, it depends on what those boxes are. What I find really fascinating is that there, as we look at the differences in brain wiring, the majority of people actually manage complexity by organizing, categorizing. We love our boxes and the hierarchies, right? That's a neurotypical way of dealing with people and complexity and pretty much anything. About 20% of people manage complexity by connecting. We don't fit in lanes. We don't fit in boxes. We pattern match. It's very much the profile for a good future leader, one who does not fit neatly in a box. So at Lodestone, I'm already running into these as CEO. We're starting to build our team and nobody on our team fits in a box. Everybody does multiple things. So we have, you know, from insights to coaching, to tech, to operations, like everybody spans. I call them intersection players. And the most important people to me right now are the intersection players. They're the ones who actually see that this thing over here is connected to that thing over there. And then once we start growing large enough, we'll absolutely need subject matter experts that fit inside certain boxes. But there really needs to be this layer of connectivity, and that is missing in the vast majority of organizations. Because if you look at this through the lens of how people's brains are wired, if you're more of a linear thinker, I call it kind of, you like to compartmentalize and kind of think in straight lines, you're not even really aware that people like, let's say me, exist or why we're needed. So being able to surface these people who don't fit into boxes is really, really important. So let's create another box. I hate to do this, but let's create another box that's called the intersection players, the people who don't stay in their lane and they don't fit in boxes. So that's another, we can lump those together and go, we need these people.
Yeah. Cool. And the ambiguous box. As a marketing ploy, if you like.
Yes, the ambiguous box. Or it's, you know, actually what it is, it's all the space in between the boxes. That's where people like me reside.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing as well, is that I'm not good at the connecting the dots if they're all in a line, but scramble them about the page and I'll find them all for you.
And there's huge advantages. So I know some people who think that that can be messy and disorganized and terrifying. But if you're someone who sees patterns, then we focus on the pattern and everything else is irrelevant. So we can actually see where there's massive amounts of money being spent in irrelevant places that are completely, it's like such a waste of money. We're usually really good at optimizing budgets.
So is this a big psychological shift, do you think?
I think we need one. I think what is needed, so fundamentally, what we're trying to do at Lodestone is to scale human understanding. We don't even know ourselves. There's a study done, this is written up in Harvard Business Review, 80% of us think we know ourselves, but in reality, only 10 to 15% of leaders actually do. So if we don't understand ourselves, how our brains are wired, how we process information, how we're different than from other people, where do we sit in the vast tapestry of humanity? And where are other people? And how are we all incredibly valuable in our own different ways without all the assumptions and expectations that we have brought with us from an old way and a very ineffective way of operating, right? So I would say this is beyond just a psychological shift. This is the shift that I think that will naturally happen when we understand ourselves and other people better. And what I find very ironic is that we may actually need artificial intelligence and AI to help us know our own humanity better.
So this is super interesting. It sounds like you've set yourself a really, really big job to change perceptions and change the way people work and just change the whole system.
Yes. I like to think about what I call the hidden human forces. It's everything that is invisible to the eye. Why are people the way they are? Who are they and why are they the way they are? These are questions that I have asked myself since I was a little kid. I've been very completely fascinated by it. And I think that once we are able to reveal that and pull back the curtain, ultimately, you know, right now, human insights, there's no market for human insights, which I find fascinating. There's market intelligence in which customer insights are separate from employee insights. They're even separated and fragmented within organizations. They're separated across organizations. They're separated. You have the consulting industry that has insights, and you have the marketing departments who have insights, and you have, you know, executive search firms, and you have HR, and you have transformation and culture you have all these different fragmented industries and sectors and companies, and they're never pulled together into a single view, a whole three-dimensional, multi-rich view of humanity. Even within the human insights groups, you have psychologists and organizational psychologists and anthropologists and cognitive psychologists, and you have all these different experts, and they've gotten so narrow in their focus. It's a bit like the healthcare system, right? Where everybody has gotten so narrowly focused that there's no multidisciplinary opportunity to bring everybody together, except for in places like the Mayo Clinic, right? Or the Cleveland Clinic. And the reason why they're so impactful is because they've broken down those barriers, and they are bringing together people with multiple perspectives to have a holistic view of the patient in this case. So we're looking at doing the same thing from the perspective of how do we better understand human beings? What are all the various perspectives out there? And stop making it so proprietary, but who are people? Who are we? I mean, this is crazy how little we actually know about ourselves.
It sounds, as you're speaking, it sounds like it's not just useful for companies that are looking internally for leadership. But if, you know, if you're somebody like a VC that was looking to invest in your next startup, to be able to have these insights on founders would be, you know, is it the next Elizabeth Holmes, or am I talking to...
Amazing.
I mean, it'd be amazing.
Yes. I mean, the technology is there right now. We absolutely do this. We can look at, you know, a Sam Bankman-Fried or Elizabeth Holmes and see, you know, we can look at the Elon Musks of the world, you know, and look at Big Five and even more, right? Who should you be focused on? Who should you invest in? The question that we're answering is, who has what it takes to lead into the future? And that could be a senior level corporate person. It could be a brand shiny new junior person sitting in some random department that you don't even know about that could be your next leader and you have no idea. It could be the piles of female startup founders who are currently only getting less than 2% of VC funding, which is shocking.
I've kind of got a bit of it's an anti-question. Maybe it's not an anti-question, but a different question to it. So what happens to the people who aren't leaders, who don't get selected to be promoted and just end up at the bottom pile? And, you know, this comes from, I think it's the Black Mirror episode with Bryce Dallas Howard, who she has one bad day and then she can't catch a break. And then she ends up, I think she, did she go... stir crazy, like she just doesn't, it doesn't end well. So what happens to them?
Well, for starters, not everybody is cut out to lead people. I mean, this leadership is not some holy grail that everybody should aspire to. There's loads of examples too where people get promoted out of their zone of genius, and suddenly, you know, you're dealing in with management of people and paperwork, and you might not be a good manager of people. You might just really be amazing at doing whatever it is that you're doing, and you should stay there and not just get trapped at the bottom of the pile, but how can we really nurture and develop those people to be the best that they can be wherever they sit, you know? And I think that's really important to keep in mind. The other thing is, if we're looking, I'm a big fan of going deeper than behavior, initial behavior. So for example, I'm very likely on the spectrum and ADD, and I had no idea. But when I was working within very neurotypical management consulting, that they would get very angry at me for not thinking in a linear fashion. And I don't think in a linear fashion. It did not bring out my best at all. Like I probably scored very high on the neuroticism scale. And I was impulsive and overreactive, and just, I was getting my trauma buttons pushed like on a daily basis. I went home in tears every week for 2 years. So I'm sure that those people looking at me were like, oh my God, Jen is not at all suited to be a leader. When I surround myself with people who understand how my brain works, and it brings out my best. I am at my best in a different context with different people who can see me and appreciate me, and I can see and appreciate them. And we all work in a really different way. So what happens when we're dealing with these hidden human forces that you can't see is that a lot of times behavior is an external manifestation of a lack of fit, whether that's it's a poor fit in a team, it's a poor fit for the culture. It's the lack of understanding of those senior leaders to understand that different people's brains work differently. If I and the leadership of that particular company had fully understood my value, that I am not a linear thinker, and no matter how much you shame me in front of my teams, I am never going to become a linear thinker. There are other ways that you can actually benefit from my brain that is not putting me in a particular box in which I don't fit. So ultimately, what I feel like this technology and this overall mission that I have around revealing these, helping people understand why people are the way they are, is precisely so that everybody can find their place where they feel seen, where they feel like they belong, and everyone can actually bring out their best. And it doesn't matter if they're a leader or not a leader, or what is a leader anyway. I mean, you can be a leader without having a team reporting to you. Leadership is an embodied state of being.
The way things are at the moment is the expectations of what a leader is based on what's happened historically about the stereotypical leader we have, which is why we have so many men on boards, and we have the issues with women and people of color and minorities and the way they're born for the life. And then from that level, not knowing where to go next. So wanting to change things, but not knowing how. It's almost a systemic shakeup that you're looking at delivering through Lodestone.
Absolutely. No longer, let's forecast 10 years in the future, right? Let's say everybody has the ability to know themselves and to know other people. We're all carrying around personal NFTs that I can scan, and I can see what really lights you up, what motivates you, what situations you're best at, what are your superpowers. And I'm a big fan of really leaning into strengths. So this is all about, I know this is kind of scary to a lot of people, but really when we focus on stepping into who you are and what you do best, miraculously, all your crazy, you know, neuroticism and everything just settles down, which is awesome. So in the future, when we're actually really able to see who people truly are, then the expected people, just because you look a certain way or went to a certain school or know XYZ. Yeah, I mean, we start democratizing opportunity far beyond who is expected. It's almost like we're giving everybody X-ray glasses, and you can see an entire world that your human eyes can't see. And then you're like, oh, this rock star Black queer woman totally is going to be our next CEO because she is a freaking rock star, right? I mean, because if we are starting to now wear our hidden human forces glasses and we can see what's inside, it becomes just a no-brainer. That's my hope anyway.
I suppose to bring it to a modern exercise class quote that used to get bandied about quite a while, you vibe with your tribe, right? So the people who you can identify with the most, or the people who on a neurological level, not like a external level, you kind of, once you find that groove and that crowd, then you really come alive as a person. You can really get the most out of it, and you want to be with them and you want to be better around them, right? So it's all about reaching that level of understanding from each other from a more intimate level internally and neurologically.
No, and you bring up such a good point. So the reason why we've called the company Lodestone. Lodestone is the world's only natural magnet. And if you look at all the really, let's say, high growth brands, you look at Apple, Apple doesn't even need to really advertise. You don't have to spend gobs of money in advertising. Let's say Steve Jobs basically designed a company to satisfy a set of needs. And there's no difference between Apple's internal employee brand and their external brand. They've created a magnet that attracts a certain kind of person, very creative, aesthetically driven, control over technology, rebel, right? They've identified, I mean, I don't think he even did this on purpose. He basically created a company for himself, for his own, because I think he knew himself really well, right? I mean, he's a rebel, he's a creative person. Same thing with, you know, a Richard Branson, for example. So those leaders or founders who deeply know themselves, and we start looking at founder customer fit or founder team fit, not market, not product market fit. That has nothing to do with humanity. Let's look at where you're going to get the emotional resonance, because that's really, Andrew, what you're talking about is emotional resonance. But really good cultures do this. They really anchor in on understanding the deeper humanity and designing this brand that is magnetically attracts. It's almost like the force of gravity. So we don't actually want to use this technology initially to help marketing departments. It's what we need to do is help leaders at all levels in all departments create this gravitational pull that reduces the need for a bunch of sales and marketing spend, because you've intrinsically built belonging into the fabric of your company for a certain kind of person. There's a big difference between a security seeker and a rebel. These are these two archetypes that are constantly at odds with each other, is the rebel versus the guardian. The guardian who wants to keep everything the same and is more traditional values versus the rebel who wants to, you know, forge change and blow everything up. So really, and those are only just two of many, many different types of archetypes. So when you've really identified that, who do we want to attract and keep at all levels, all different kinds of people, then you automatically create diversity. Because I have more in common, for example, with an Apple user who grew up in a small village in Nigeria. I'm making this up, right? I have more in common with my mindset, no matter where we grew up, no matter what color we are, no matter what gender or anything we are, versus the people who, you know, who are in America, who I might have grown up next door to.
So, Jen, what would you say you're most proud of achieving in your diversity and inclusion journey so far?
I think I'm most proud of, I stepped out of society for about 4 years. I left the States in 2019 to roam around the world with a camera and a carry-on. And through that, and spending lockdown in like places like Tbilisi, Georgia, the country, and the coast of Egypt. And these 4 years really were a deep dive into my own self, into understanding myself better, into understanding brain wiring, starting to do coaching and somatic coaching. Somatics is something we haven't even brought up yet, but the whole body language, how we carry our body, has such a massive influence. I'm very happy that I gave myself this time to know myself better, because now that I'm coming back out into society, into, you know, London and building a business, I feel like I am much better equipped to be a better leader, to hire the right people, to build the kind of culture that I want to, because I really took this time for myself to more deeply understand how I'm wired. So, you know, I hope that everyone gives themselves that gift, because I think it just makes us better humans, and we're able to really more deeply see and appreciate the people around us.
So do you know who else did that? And I'm not making it about pop or cultural pop reference, Taylor Swift. So she decided to take a few years out from the industry, went underground, went hidden, and now she's come back bigger and better than before, and is like on track to become a billionaire within the next couple of years. So there's a lot to be said for just going off grid, taking time to yourself, discovering who you work best with, finding what your motivations are, and just keep going from strength to strength when you do return bigger and badder than before. So Jen, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Thanks so much for your time. And to our listeners, make sure you tune in for our next episode of Together Equal Diversity Made Simple.